Welcome to this week's edition of Everything Fast Pitch by Fast Pitch Prep. Coach Don and I are here in the Cherokee Batting Range podcast studio getting ready to record episode number 311. Got a great show lined up for you this week. In our warm-up segment, we're going to talk about our Did You Know, City of the Week, Player of the Week, Equipment Tip of the Week, have a fun listener question, and of course, Paige's Power Play. In our leadoff topic, we're going to talk about organization politics. You know, many of you read my What's Wrong with Travel Ball series of blogs. Our listener was checking in on a couple that he had read and had a couple of things he wanted us to talk about. So we're going to throw that out there for some thoughtful discussion.
More, yeah.
We're going to jump over to a different sport. We're going to talk about one of the phenomenon in women's athletics right now, which is Caitlin Clark, and kind of a lack of respect or lack of consideration for some things that I keep seeing in the way that media and some other folks are handling her setting the new scoring record. And I just wanted us to talk about that a little bit. And in our Action Coach Coaching Tip of the Week, Coach John's going to talk about how business and softball interact and intersect and some things that he sees in the business world that also applies to the softball world. So before we do that, let's talk about our sponsors. First, the Anderson Bat Company.
Everything Fast Pitch is very proud to have Anderson Bat Company as our presenting sponsor. Anderson Bat Company is using the latest and greatest bat technology to corner the market in the fast pitch world. They have the -9 rocket tech, the -10 carbon, and the -11 carbon light. Anderson Bat Company is using this technology to put a high-performing bat in the hands of hitters that really know the difference between a good bat and a great bat. We're also working with Anderson to provide a discount for all of our listeners. Go to the Anderson Bat Company website and order your bats. Use the EFP20 discount, which is for Everything Fast Pitch, and you'll get a 20% discount.
And again, take advantage of that EFP20. It's a great way for you to save that additional 20% and support the podcast. Also, we want you to become a patron. Go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. It's a very easy process. Get signed up. We've got a great group of patrons that have been supporting the podcast for a long time, and we want to get more people to jump on board. If you're in a position where you can help us, go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. Our warm-up segment is sponsored by Bidinger & Stiles DDS. They're located in Webster, Mass. If you have any dental needs at all and you're in the Webster area, check out the folks at Bidinger & Stiles and let them know that you heard about their services on the podcast. So Don, did you know, last week we talked about Oklahoma's end of the winning streak. Their 71-game winning streak was broken. And I wanted us to talk a little bit because did you know Love's Field, their new stadium, 4,500 plus seats, is clearly, without a doubt, the nicest collegiate facility in the country.
Pretty amazing, I'm sure.
Yeah, and if you get a chance to look online, they do a virtual tour. But if you follow Oklahoma softball on any of the social platforms, there's plenty of pictures and videos where you can see enough of the background, see enough of what's going on with the stadium to see that this is really something special. This is, you know, absolutely state of the art. But here's why I think it's an interesting thing. In the last week, I've seen at least 15 schools, maybe more, with things on social media, Facebook and Instagram, talking about this new addition, this new improvement. We're revamping this. We're going to redo that. We're building a new this kind of thing. And I saw it up close and personal. I went to see a game at Georgia a couple of weekends ago. And anybody that's ever been to Jack Turner Stadium knows they used to have this big giant grandstand in center field, which was kind of a fun place to sit and watch the game because you were, felt like you were close enough to it, but it was just a little bit of a different perspective. You know, it had a lot of room to move around. Well, they're building this gigantic new state-of-the-art indoor practice facility, hitting building, locker room, you know, team room, offices, all that stuff. And it's an amazing looking building. But I think what we're going to be seeing for sure at the top of the food chain, the schools like Georgia and other places like that.
Trying to keep up.
Trying to keep up. Now, not everybody's going to build a 4,500-seat stadium. You know, I just don't think that's going to happen right away because I don't think a lot of the other schools probably believe that they can sell them out the way Oklahoma knows they can. But I do think we're going to see a gigantic influx in money and facilities
investment
into the softball programs because at the end of the day, you know, one of the things that you have to be able to do is keep up with the Joneses if you want to be successful. And obviously having such a beautiful facility has given Oklahoma a big leg up.
Well, I think that's going to be very exciting, Tori. And I know you maybe put a number on it. How much was Oklahoma?
It's like close to $50 million.
It's just an amazing number.
Yeah.
And if all these other schools do anything even remotely close, going to be great for all the young ladies that are aspiring to play in college,
because right.
that's a fun environment to be involved in. You know, just that they're making that investment in our game, I think that's crazy awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And the only unfortunate thing for those of us that spent their whole lives coaching at little schools that don't have big budgets, the gap between the haves and the have-nots
is going to get bigger.
And I, you know, we've talked a lot about the minor league, major league kind of analogy when we talk about college athletics. And, you know, I think right now we definitely are going to have some major leaguers, but we're also going to, within that classification, you're going to have some people that are even like the top of that food chain. So, you know, when you think about Major League Baseball, you don't think about the Minnesota Twins or the Milwaukee Brewers and what they spend and what they've invested like you do the Yankees or the Dodgers.
Right.
And so I think already in Division I softball, we've got some Yankees and Dodgers and you know, those kinds of people that are spending like way over the top. And then the next wave, and then there's, you know, several waves on down. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of schools that are Division I schools are going to start to feel like they're, you know, double A or single A minor league programs
layer.
Because the difference between what they have and what those big schools have is so gigantic. So it's great for the kids that are going to have access to it, and we don't want to downplay that, but it's just one of those cautionary tales as we keep thinking about the future of college athletics.
I'm anxious to see just how and what everybody's going to do.
So yeah,
will be great.
So Love's Field has set the standard, but there's a whole lot of people trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Let's keep it rolling.
All right, so this week, our city of the week, Don, is Calgary. So let's talk Canada.
Calgary, Alberta, Canada is a fantastic place. We actually went back and visited here recently for my mother's 80th birthday, and it was cold. I got to say, it was cold. It was probably, and they do Celsius up there, so maybe minus 15 and snowy, and it's not quite softball weather yet, but I'm super excited that Calgary is our city of the week. Them having jumped up in our numbers means that they've been sharing it.
Yeah, and absolutely. Yeah. So we ask you every week, find somebody in your softball world that is not a listener yet and get them hooked up with everything Fast Pitch and Coach Prep. And again, obviously, we want to say thanks to the folks in Calgary. It's always encouraging to us when we see the numbers jumping. And I think Don's got a pretty big extended family and friends up there. So I think them seeing his smiling, happy face in the area probably reminded a few more people to listen.
There you go. I love it.
All right. That would take us to our normal Player of the Week nomination. But guess what, folks? We've hit another lull.
Ah.
So one of the things we have to talk about, and periodically we just go through these stretches where, you know, we'll get nominations like crazy for a while, and then we just hit a wall and nobody thinks of it or feels like there's anything going on. And I know in some parts of the country, we're just starting to really get cranked up with, you know, spring seasons.
Distracted with the start. Yep.
But what we want to do is make sure that all of you understand that, you know, the Player of the Week thing is something that's very important to us. It's something that I think is the best thing we do. And the only way that it works is if you reach out to us with those nominations. Everybody who listens to this podcast, and thousands of you listen, every one of you knows somebody, a player that is worthy. All we ask you to do is reach out to us with an email at everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. It doesn't need to be player's whole life story. You know, sometimes I'll get like a 6-page email where I forget their entire statistical history for their entire life. But more often than not, it's a paragraph or two. And it's just, you know, why I want to nominate this player. And you know, it doesn't need to be just a gigantic landmark on the field, you know, success in the classroom, doing something special in the community, just being a good person all the way around, being a good teammate. All those kinds of things are things that we want to be recognizing. And when you look at the players that have been nominated, you know, for everyone who is a, oh my gosh, she's an amazing player, she's going to big school X, we've had 10 that have been, she's a young player who's just getting started. She's really passionate. She's really working hard. Mm-hmm. She really loves the game. And we want to recognize all those kids. So we need your Player of the Week nominations. Send them to everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. So down our equipment tip of the week, let's talk about Mule Tech.
Mule Tech is an exciting addition for us. And we said that again last week. But, you know, I've gotten on the website a few times now. I know we talked about the grips, which are great, last week. But I was also looking at some of the catch nets. They have multiple catch nets there. Some of them are set up for our hitters, but also for pitchers.
Yep.
And it's kind of neat when we're training on our own to have those pocket nets where it's, you know, like a touch-tone phone where it's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, six.
The 9 pockets where you can target a specific spot and things like that.
And, you know, even if I'm working on my own on my pitching or overhand throwing, I can be working on accuracy and things like that. And picking a spot and trying to hit it and not worry about too much of the surrounding area there getting beat up because I don't have anybody to catch or receive it. So getting on there and looking at all the protective screens and things like that, I know that there's a product for everybody, and we just got to get out there and share it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and folks at Mule Tech have set us up with our EFP10 discount. So the discount code is EFP, all capitals, 10. No spaces, anything. It's just EFP10. And again, a lot of the stuff that they offer are things that are very useful and the kinds of things that a player and family should have for their home training. But some of it's also geared more towards team practices and those kinds of things. Whichever angle you're looking at it from, you know, that discount code is good for anybody we want to share it with. So, you know, make sure the people from your organization, your school, your rec department, anybody that you deal with that might be looking for nets,
those type of things,
screens, yeah. Bases, training tools. You know, they've got all kinds of different training stuff that I've used over the years and just love. And so I think it's important that we spread the word about Mule Tech. And again, that EFP10 discount, we're super excited that they're on board with us. We also want to talk real quickly about our Square Cuts training discs. Those are something that Coach Don and I developed. You go to the fastpitchprep.com website. You can look at the YouTube channel. There's a couple of short videos that show you ways that we intended them to be used for hitting. They're very affordable, $49.95 a dozen. And make sure you go ahead and get those ordered up too. It's another great supplementary tool that you can use in your home training or team practices because it adds a little bit of variety to what we're doing. So make sure you check out the Square Cuts training discs at fastpitchprep.com. So Don, our listener question is sponsored by EAS. The phone number at EAS is 770-500-4972. Reach out to Greg and let him know that you're looking for some help with some recruiting, and they'll be happy to answer any questions that you have. So the question this week, Don, comes to us from Will. Will says, I'm coaching a 14 and under team with 13 players. What's a great way for me to set up some hitting stations to have an effective practice and work on hitting in practice?
When we're trying to prepare our group, I think well-rounded workouts are ideal. Depending on the space we have and things like that might dictate some of our ability to create a big variety. But I think variety and keeping everybody busy is really the big key, right?
For sure. And I think, you know, there's some things that I think are really easy to build into any kind of useful hitting circuit. But I think we want to always be thinking about sort of like a progression of drills that takes us from hitting on a tee to some sort of soft toss to some sort of, you know, recognition, you know, something that includes some inside and outside, you know, pitch recognition and some moving balls, whether it's soft toss or front toss or whatever it is. But if you've got, you know, let's say, you know, in this case, we've got 13 players, you know, we could have a really easy circuit set up with three or four stations. You know, maybe one's a tee, maybe one is you know, soft toss, maybe one is like inside outside tee work. Another one might be vision training, so we're working on something where we're tracking the ball. It might include bunting, but it also can include some front toss or something that, you know, simulates real pitching. The one thing that I think is most important, if we want our hitting practice to be really effective, the idea of setting up stations and doing some sort of a circuit to me is the secret. You know, the idea of one kid hits and 10 kids stand out in the field shagging balls, it's a practice, but it's not going to be an effective way to make sure that everybody stays involved and stay and really get some quality work in. You know, if you set up a good little circuit, you know, in a half hour, you know, you can have your kids get in, you know, 50, 70, 100 really good swings.
For sure.
And work on a lot of different things that are going to be really valuable to them. So, and again, I think I would always be thinking about tailoring it to make sure that it fits the needs of the players that I have. We would do hitting circuits every single day, and we got to the point where at each station, we would have, you know, some options for different players. So Don and I might be partners as we're working our way through the hitting circuit. At the first one, I might just be hitting off a tee, hitting the ball up the middle, but Don might be working on hitting the outside pitch.
I'm having trouble with the outside. Yeah.
And then the next station, it might be soft toss, and it's my job as Don's partner to know that he really needs to work on the changeup, so I'm throwing in a lot of double clutches, you know, to make him work on keeping his hands back. And for me, it might be low in the zone. So Don's working on tossing pitches that are a little bit lower for me to hit. The one thing, you know, I think if we get to the point where we can tailor it a little bit to meet each player's needs, you know, I think obviously then it's going to be super, super productive. But anything that's got the kids getting a lot of quality swings, I think is a really good idea.
I really like that idea for sure, Tori. And something that is hard to incorporate occasionally is getting to hit on the field.
Right.
I like to see where the ball goes as well.
Right.
And it's really impossible here in the cages to do that.
Right. But you don't need nine kids standing in positions and things like that, too, to have that be effective.
Absolutely. But if you are able to, of course, you know, the drills and everything on the side are good on their own, standalone. But if we can let them hit it out on the field a little bit as well, that's, I think, exciting as, from a hitting standpoint.
Yeah, it's definitely fun for the hitters, too. But the one thing I will say, the very best hitting teams I ever coached, because we were in Wisconsin in February and March, we never got on a field to hit until we started playing games. And then I think the hitting on the field in games was so exciting that probably amped everybody up a little bit more. So, but Will, thank you much, very much for the question. You know, just like the Player of the Week nomination, send those questions to everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. And we'll be happy to talk about whatever it is that you're curious about. And Will, your t-shirt's in the mail. So Don, that's going to take us to this week's edition of Paige's Power Play.
Hey there, it is Paige, and I just wanted to share that. So I've been reading an amazing book called Champion Minded by Alistair McCall. And one of the chapters really stuck out to me about perfection. It is titled Getting Past Perfection. This has been a hot topic with the athletes I've been working with because 99% of them would consider themselves perfectionist and their parents agree. The author, Alistair, he talks about how champion-minded athletes can absolutely have high standards and high expectations of themselves, but they understand that there will be times that they underperform and they will not be perfect. It's all about how they handle failure and mistakes. That's what makes them successful athletes. Here's the key. You don't have to be perfect to be successful. Whew, right? Like, doesn't it feel good to know that? Like weight lifted. But here are some journal questions that you can share with your daughter, with your athlete to help work through perfection and be able to just focus on being the best that they can be instead. So here are the questions. What can you do to accept failures and mistakes and instead fight on? What would it look like if you focused on having more a perfect effort rather than a perfect performance? And then lastly, what would it feel like to let go of being perfect? So I'm going to say this one more time. What can you do to accept failures and mistakes and instead fight on? What would it look like if you focused on having a perfect effort rather than a perfect performance? And then what would it feel like to let go of being perfect? The conversations that I'm having with my athletes is like, the whole purpose is like, let's embrace failures, struggles, challenges, mistakes. It's the only way to learn and improve and be successful. I hope this was helpful. I hope you use these journal questions with your daughter. If you want more of this, that's what I'm here for, to help these girls learn how to actually be confident, how to create confidence, and let go of things like perfection.
And I rave about Paige every week, folks, but you got to make sure you check out her programs. She's a rock star, and we're super happy and really blessed that she's part of our podcast. But go to Paige Tonz, it's TONZ.com. So our leadoff segment, sponsored by Elite Sporting Goods, they're located at 905 Grayson Highway in Lawrenceville, Georgia. The phone number there is 678-377-0270. You can also contact them at EliteSportsOrders@yahoo.com. Anything you need, and they're happy to ship it anywhere in the country. So, Don, one of our listeners sent me an email this week and was talking about the series of blogs I did a while back about what's wrong with travel ball. And the one that he was really struck by, and his question basically was, why do so many organizations feel like they have to have, quote unquote, national or premier or gold level teams? His question was really kind of centered around the idea of, is that because certain organizations really have teams that are that much better, or is it more of a marketing tool that organizations are using to kind of drive the numbers and try to appeal to more people? And to me, it's a little bit of both.
Sure.
You know, in some organizations, I think that they do have, you know, a very clear delineation between their best teams in an age group, maybe their not quite as strong teams, and then maybe even some, you know, more entry-level teams in an organization. You know, some of the organizations that have so many teams, it's unrealistic to think that if you're looking at organization X, that their very best team, their medium team, and their weakest team in an age division are all going to be the same just because they wear the same jerseys or have the same, you know, organization name attached to them. So I think in some cases, the idea of separating them in one way, you know, identifying them in a certain way as being a gold team or a national team or a premier team kind of makes sense. But I think for every organization that's doing it because they want to have a way to separate and identify their very best teams, there's also other organizations that are just doing it as a way to drive more people to their organization and to make more people feel maybe more special than their team really is.
No, I think that can definitely be a lure. It's like, hey, be a part of this organization so that you can aspire to be one of the players on this elite group, that everybody gets recruited, everybody moves on from there. I think that's definitely part of it. And the big orgs, they've got every level, just like you said. They've got the high-end groups that everybody wants to work for, and then everything in between. I think that that's a pretty normal thing, right?
Yeah.
But it definitely draws attention to the organization if they do have that special group that has a chance to win every day.
Right.
And that can be exciting for
sure. I think it's a double-edged sword, because I think the one thing, and this is where the buyer beware when we're talking about, you know, I'm aspiring to be on a certain team, part kicks in. If you're in one organization, or you look at one organization and they're, let's say, gold team or national team or whatever their designation is for their top level team, is that very best team in that age group for their organization, the very best team or one of the very best teams in their area in that age group, the kind of team that goes to Colorado or California or Florida to these big giant tournaments and plays on Sunday late into the tournament, then them being identified as the special team in that organization is really meaningful.
Sure.
But just like you can have the team that's really special that identifies that way, you can also have another team that's not very special at all that still identifies the exact same, you know, uses the exact same terminology to identify their team. And so, you know, being a gold team, being a national team, being a team that really is competing for the highest levels of the highest tournaments is great to aspire to, but where I think we get into trouble is that there's a lot of organizations and a lot of teams that think that somehow just by slapping that label on our team, that somehow we're going to be better than we really are.
We might be. Yeah.
You know, we're going to draw a better place. And I see this all the time. We want to be an elite team because elite means that we're going to get better players. Well, the truth of it is, having gold or elite or national or premier on the line of your team, being, you know, organization X gold, doesn't mean that you're necessarily something special. Now, being Organization X Gold McKinley might mean something, because the last name, the name of the coach who's coaching that team, might really be what you identify with the level of
the history,
the quality of the players. You know, once upon a time when I was first starting to recruit in the Atlanta area and when Don was coaching at KSU, there were four or five 18 and under teams that were clearly amongst the best teams in the country. And we all watched them all the time, and they didn't even need to say they were gold or elite or national, because if you watched Daniel Caldwell's Georgia Elite, you knew because it was Daniel Caldwell's team that they were going to be pretty darn good.
You call them whatever you want to call them.
If you watched, you know, Greg Schnoody's East Cobb Bullets team, you knew they were going to be pretty darn good. They didn't need to be Bullets Gold or Bullets Premier or Bullets whatever. You know, because you knew Greg and you knew his name was affiliated with the team. You knew they were good. Ernie with the original Vipers and, you know, and any of those other early days, we knew those teams were good, not because they were Vipers or Bullets or Elite or Fire or, you know,
they already pre-qualified and the fast pitch prep
Purple Cobras. It didn't matter what the team name was. It was the name of the person that was coaching it. And so to answer this question, you know, I think you have to definitely understand that the landscape of the travel ball world promotes the idea of labeling certain teams specifically because they've earned it and deserve it, and it should mean something special. But unfortunately, it means a lot less, and it's a lot less special because too many other teams that don't deserve it are trying to use the same label.
We just need one of those in our org.
And Stan brings up a good point, too. When we think about the levels of these teams, the one reason why some teams are some organizations are identifying teams as specifically being their best team is the idea that other best players are supposed to be drawn to those teams.
Right.
Right. So, you know, you and I and Stan might all have teams within the same organization, but if Stan's team is the gold team, you and I both might have players that are
capable,
capable that end up on his team eventually.
What happens to me?
Well, or me too. How do we handle it when it's your kid?
Right.
So anyhow, what does it mean to be gold or national or premier or elite? It depends on the organization, but it really depends on the team. And if you're a parent looking for a team, if you're a parent looking for a quote-unquote better team for your kid to play on, pay attention to the name of the coach way more than the name of the organization and the label that they attach to the teams within it. If it's a great coach who's had a great record of building strong teams, getting kids recruited, playing at the highest level, whether their organization labels them the gold team or the national team or the elite team doesn't have anything to do with it. And like I said a couple of times already, there's an awful lot of quote-unquote national elite premier gold teams that are not very good.
Right.
And so we just have to be honest about that fact. And just because somebody's attaching that name, coaches, it's not going to help you get better players. If your reputation is you're an average coach, it doesn't matter whether you're the super platinum, duper, whooper, absolutely maximus team of all time, gold, whatever, from an organization, you're still going to get the same kinds of players and you're still going to have the same kind of team. So
that's fair.
So yeah. Hopefully that puts that one to rest. We'll maybe talk about a few of the other ideas here in the future if anybody else is interested. But
side notes there.
Yeah, but we certainly do appreciate our listeners getting involved and asking us to talk about stuff. And it was really kind of fun to know somebody actually read some of my blogs.
There you go.
Without responding on Facebook telling me I'm an idiot, which might be true too. All right, so that's going to take us to our cleanup topic. Our cleanup topic is sponsored by Pinnacle Power Products. Everything Fast Pitch is very proud to be sponsored by Pinnacle Power Butter. It's a nutritious snack that every athlete should have in their bag of tricks. It will allow you to get a great snack, something that's healthy and nutritious, all natural, and goes a long way towards making a ball player a better one.
And Tori, our listeners can get their Pinnacle Power Butter at pinnaclepowerbutter.com. And they can place their order there. Again, that's pinnaclepowerbutter.com. If they use their promo code of EFP10, they can also get a 10% discount. And we're really excited that they're on board with us. Products are great. We've used them and tried them at home. The whole family loves it.
And again, make sure you take advantage of that EFP10 discount. It's a great way for you to save that additional 10%. So Don, I love women's sports. I love watching all the different sports, but obviously softball is my number one favorite, but I like watching women's basketball. I've been a UConn fan forever. I love watching women's volleyball when Penn State was rolling and was really good. I loved watching that. You know, growing up in Wisconsin, Wisconsin's volleyball team has been really good. Nebraska obviously had 100,000 people show up for a volleyball match. What that tells me is that, you know, women's sports has really taken off, and we've got a really kind of unusual phenomenon. Caitlin Clark from Iowa just recently set the all-time scoring record. She broke Pete Maravich's record for all-time Division I. Now, I shouldn't say all-time college sports because there's some back-in-the-day scoring records that she has not surpassed. In the quote-unquote modern game, she is now the all-time leading scorer. And for all the recognition and celebration that I've seen of that, which has been a lot, and I don't want to make it sound like everybody's, you know, trying to dump all over it like it's not a big deal, because a lot of people have really been treating it with respect and have gone out of their way to, you know, talk about what an amazing accomplishment it is. I was listening to First Take the other day, and, you know, that's obviously as combustible a show as there's ever been on sports talk shows. And they were talking about how she might be the most recognizable college athlete right now in the country. She's probably, without a doubt, the most recognizable college basketball player.
Right.
Because in the men's game, the great players only play for a year and then they go to the NBA. So you don't have the same kind of relationship that, you know, Caitlin Clark has built over a full career at Iowa. But for every five or six really nice things I've seen, I've also seen two or three, well, it doesn't really mean this because it's not as impressive because she had this advantage, or, you know, she got to play this many more games, or she's got the 3-point line, or, you know, she's the only good player on their team. Everything they do is meant to help her score points and all this kind of sort of left-handed, left-handed compliments, you know, kind of like, well, yeah, it's fine, but it's not really that great. It's okay, but it's not really that impressive. And I wanted to use our format, you know, our platform to just kind of talk about how unfortunate it is that we still have to deal with this kind of stuff. And we see it all the time when we talk about, you know, women's sports. the same thing that gets celebrated and talked about and praised in the men's game. You know, a men's baseball player does a bat flip, you know, and he's got fire and he's got spunk. You know, a softball player does a bat flip and, oh, I can't believe she does that. Doesn't she know little kids are watching her, kind of thing. You know, we watch, you know, somebody in a college basketball game, a men's player dunk and hang on the rim and, you know, flip off the crowd and do all this kind of stuff. And, you know, that just shows how fiery he is. That just shows how spunky he is. You know, but we have a situation, you know, where, you know, a woman's player gets a little, you know, enthusiastic or a little emotional, or, you know, there's a little chirpiness or whatever. And it's like, oh my God, I can't believe that that's happening, kind of stuff goes on. And it just aggravates me, because I would have hoped by now we'd be getting to the point where women's athletics would be so acceptable and so accepted that those kinds of things would be just as accepted in the women's game. And that when something really special like Caitlin Clark setting a record of this magnitude happens, that we could just not dump on it, just let it be the big thing that it really is and just enjoy it, because it's an amazing accomplishment and we should all be celebrating what she's done.
No, I think that's a good point, Tori. And there are a lot of amazing female athletes in many different sports. When they do accomplish these things that are way above the norm, it needs to be recognized and it needs to be appreciated,
right,
as a spectator. And I'm excited that you're bringing that to light. And again, there's so many neat things that happen in softball that we kind of lose track of some of the other sports, because I know I don't keep up with all of them.
Right.
And again, that sounds like a very once in a while thing for someone to accomplish and to do that well.
Right. One, yeah. To me, the thing that just really hit close to home about it is, you know, that when you get a chance to see greatness, when somebody is really great at something, it took a lot for them to get there. And it, you know, they committed and sacrificed, and, you know, there's been an awful lot that's happened that's put them in a position. It's not like she woke out, you know, rolled out of bed one day and was a great basketball player who could score, you know, thousands of points. And so when we start to talk about, well, it's not that impressive because, you know, Pete Maravich didn't have the 3-point line. If he would have had the 3-point line, he would have scored 13,000 points or 15,000 points or 2 million points or whatever it is.
Whatever,
like,
it
well,
was. Yeah.
Okay. And if we didn't have computers, nobody would be, if we didn't have smartphones, nobody would be arguing about this stuff on social media. So, I mean, just because it was a different time and place doesn't mean
it wasn't special.
Right. And, yeah, her setting this record doesn't take anything away from what he did or what Lynette Woodard did or what Cheryl Miller did or what any other great athlete did in their era. And so, you know, let's just celebrate the greatness when we see it. You know, whether it's a great softball player, great basketball player, whatever it is, and instead of trying to downplay it or dump on it or make it less important or try to make it feel like it's not as meaningful, let's just enjoy the heck out of it while we're seeing it, because we're seeing something special. You know, I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to see this record broken.
How old is she now? Is she?
You know, well, she's a senior now.
Senior?
So, you know,
okay.
No, but she could come back and play one more year, but she's going to go to the WNBA. So that would be the next thing. If she played next year and set the record up at, you know, some ridiculously high point, well, but she got to play extra. Well, so what? You know, she still had to put the ball in the basket. I still watch her shoot, you know, 30-foot jumpers and knock them in.
The number is the number.
And whatever frame you want to look at it through, it's still an amazing thing. And I think we need to enjoy and celebrate amazing when we can, because we don't get to see it that often. All right, so that's going to take us to our Action Coach Coaching Tip of the Week. Coach John's going to share some insights about connections between the softball world and the business world.
Hey, Coach John Davis here with Action Coach. So this message is for everyone out there that's involved in selling. I'm sure many of you are softball coaches, parents, you're working on training your own kids, things of that nature. So, you know, a lot of softball coaches, we have routines. We've got a warm-up, we've got a pregame, we've got infield, outfield, hitting. But what I wonder is how many people use a similar process or routine for their selling. My guess is there's a big number of people that believe it's simply a relationship process. A relationship building, you can't have a process. Each journey is different. Each individual is different. And while there's truth in that, it's really important to have a sales process. Some of the key steps that we have in our sales process is defining what makes you unique, what's your unique selling proposition, making sure you know who your target audience is. And then here's where the process starts. You work with your lead generation based upon what makes you unique and who your target is. So you're targeting the right people. You know where those folks are, and you know how to attract their attention. When you meet those people, when they react to your marketing, then it's about discovering what their needs are. What do they need that you can provide? And what's the implication of that need? How valuable is it that they get that need fulfilled? And only after you do that does the process move to the next step, which is about creating proposals. And the proposals are built in a way that fit the needs, the implications of the needs, their resources, and also to some extent their communication styles, their learning styles, and a lot of other interpersonal components so that you can present the proposal that's going to fit them best in the best possible light. And only then do we move to the last step, which is asking and closing. Certainly within there, sometimes we have some objections and challenges to work on, but we won't truly understand those until we really get to the ask. So why is it important to have a sales process like this? It's a lot more efficient. You have consistency. You can measure at what point your process needs to be improved and tweaked, just like knowing your batting average and your own base percentage. And also, while it is a process that's built around you and your company, it really puts the customer and the prospective customer at the center of the entire process. So I'm doing a sales training starting March 21st. Hopefully this podcast gets out there before that. But if not, there's always going to be another sales training. Love to talk to you about that. Anyone that I work with, a portion of those proceeds are going to go to Fast Pitch Prep and supporting the podcast. So just remember, now is always a good time to get into action.
All right, so that's going to wrap up number 311. Please make sure you support our sponsors, the Anderson Bat Company, Bidinger & Stiles, EAS, Elite Sports, Pinnacle Power Butter, and Action Coach. Make sure you become a patron. Go to patreon.com/everythingfastpitch. Please make sure you send in those Player of the Week nominations. Also, questions, comments, and ideas to everythingfastpitch@gmail.com or fastpitchprep@gmail.com. Make sure you go to the fastpitchprep.com website, check out the YouTube channel, the blog posts, and order your Square Cuts training discs there. They're $49.95 a dozen. So for Coach Don McKinley, our producer Stan Lewis, this is Coach Torrey saying thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.